I'm looking for a can opener.
Jim, you want to
Menu.
This tape is made on January 4th, and it's a discussion of future plans for the boycott.
Uno.
You want to start like you started the one yesterday? start like shooting down the. Yeah.
Where's the can opener, please?
Bill is coming. Bill Taylor.
Yeah.
Who's?
I got Richard.
Manuel, Richard is. You're the fastest one in the family. I'm the second fastest, and Richard is the slowest. Bill, get here.
Thank you.
I got, it doesn't have to do much with the boycott, but just to tell you, I had this meeting with the officers today, all morning, and there were a couple of them that thought that the boycott isn't that effective. And I've been away for 4 months, and I can feel the effectiveness of it. Without even if anybody told me anything, I can just, I have a feeling, a feeling of some.
Did you read what Alan Grant said in today's paper?
No.
Yesterday's paper, Delano?
No.
That boycott keeps on next year, then there's a lot of farmers going to go out of business.
Fine.
So it must be effective. Grant's saying that,
Don't be afraid of the growers going out of business, because in this book of Zapata, it's a very interesting thing. All the planning was cane and rice. And brother, you couldn't plant anything else. When the revolution came, everybody was afraid. There was no more cane, so the cane kills. That was the end of it. So people began to plant the cash crops. And the cash crops brought independence because, see, the cane had to go to one cane mill. If you have an acre of tomatoes, you can go to the market. You know how you do it in Mexico, sell it in the market. But if you have a ton of cane, where can you sell it? You can go to the mill, right? And the mill is controlled. So maybe we get rid of the grapes. Oh, that's awful. Huh? Get rid of the grapes, maybe we can
sell firewood for a while,
But anyway, what I'm saying is we're going to have a meeting with more people in the union, a broader meeting after we have this meeting, and really inform them what's happening. So they really know, and they don't, because there is a movement now, I think. The two things that come back to me and they worry me. One is, one labor leader wants us to stop, which is very influential and which means a lot to us. He says we should stop the boycott and start organizing. The same person has been involved in trying to organize workers since 1959. And they spent more money then than they spent with us, because they used to give them about $1 million a year. They only give us $100,000 a year. The other one is another group of labor leaders, very influential, who said that the boycott was nothing but a bottomless pit. And this is the mentality. This is they can't fathom, They don't understand agriculture. The agriculture is more influential than General Motors. They'll never understand this. They don't understand what land, the power that land brings. So I just throw it in, because we see if among ourselves we begin to doubt the boycott, we're in serious trouble. So before that starts, we gotta inform more people.
Yeah.
Really inform them about what's happening, and do it. Maybe what we can do is find do it visually, Like Leroy, we're working with Leroy on the health and welfare. We, in order to really let people participate and build the kind of program that they want, and we'll give it to them, we just came up with an idea. I don't know if it's going to work. We're going to play cards. We have so much money. We can only get $15 and $0.56 a month per worker. That's all the plan gives, you know. And then we have all kinds of alternatives. For instance, pay $100 for maternity, or maybe only $300. Or maybe we pay seven days of hospitalization, or maybe we pay 50 visits to the doctor. I mean, all kinds of things. So you're going to put all these, and then let people buy the services, but in a meeting, in a big meeting, in a group meeting where they really learn, where we really find out what they want. Instead of us trying to say what's the best program, let them decide, you know, and try and bring the family to them. So maybe in the boycott we could have maybe charts or graphs, you know, or I don't know, something that we could just sit and have one meeting on the boycott to report the progress, to take all the information that we have, like the cities, like what's in cold storage. So I think we have to do it. And this way, you know, everybody gets in the act. Here in Delano, they know less about the boycott, some of these people, than people out in the boycott. So I think we should sort of plan. We have one day, we call everybody in, all the Waugistas, we're going to talk about the boycott, and then just take the whole day and really explain it, and do it, you know, if possible, do it visually, you know, with press charts, with, you know, and then back up information so that people, if they start losing faith about the boycott, if they start questioning it, that means that, you know, we're, you know, and we can't afford them. We got too much in the boycott to,
What we've done is Jerry and Jane and I spent a period of time discussing the boycott, and then one day just trying to analyzing bills, materials, and then going to the cities as we know them personally, what's happening in cities where personalities are involved, and what's been effective and what hasn't worked. And then Jane took a lot of notes, and she put everything down in writing and has a kind of an outline. Then Venice has a report also on cities that I don't know so much about. Most of us have never had reported on. They're secondary cities in terms of size, but they're becoming more and more important in terms of quantity. And Bill can help analyze what he thinks is happening in terms of the official figures and what's going on there. But I think probably the best way to get the fastest overview is to just start off with Jane, because she's got the kind of report. Then we have a few proposals, but the proposals really depend on a lot of discussion and a lot further analysis of all these things together, because we drew up the proposals as a result of three people, but we didn't have Venice, we didn't have Bill there, and we didn't have new ideas to come into it too. So we have a proposal, but they're only partial, and that's, they're just a place to start with. So maybe Jane ought to start with what we.
Well, we did several things. First of all, let me outline the kinds of things we did. We tried, on the basis of the material that we had, and at that time we had information on the amount of shipments, the place every week, you know, whether the city had gone up or down. And we compared the top 41 cities, which is the information that we have, the information that comes in statistically from the Federal News Service, or whatever it's called. And we compared the place in 1968 with the place in 1966, which is a comparable harvest. And we also noted the car lots from 1968, and we numbered the city in the ranks of importance. Then what we did is compared the rank in 1968 with the rank in 1966 to see if the city had gone down, if they'd become... For example, if they had gone down, it would mean that the boycott had been more effective. If they stayed the same or gone up, it would mean that the situation was was not so good. If they if they had gone up a lot, we consider them crucially bad.
Juanita?
Yeah.
Let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Why 66 instead of 67?
Because 60...
What were the...
I think Bill can explain that better than me.
Before we go so that all of us would know why the comparison.
They seem to be about as close,
Richie,
as close as you can get as far as total production was concerned. 67 was a very bad year because it was so small a crop. And 66 seems to be as close a fit as we can make. Because after 66, you get all sorts of problems with changing in definitions and a lot of other things. 66 is best.
How do you rate 66 to 65?
Under 65, I don't know as I have the percentages in my mind. I think that 68 was supposed to be about 12% smaller than 66, but I'm not positive. Somewhere around there.
Do you know anything about 65?
That was the absolute top record.
Okay.
So we compared it to 66. And the things that have to be considered in the things that I'm going to tell you now are that the figures that we had did not include the Thanksgiving or the Christmas push. We only had the statistics up to November 21st. So that, we have to consider those other factors when we're going to decide what's going to happen with these various cities and the places that they're in.
Well, it included the shipments for Thanksgiving,
right?
That's right. It included the shipments.
It doesn't include Christmas. That's it.
Okay. And also, the thing to think about is that it does not include the possible price drops that the growers were forced, even though the city may have stayed at the same place, the growers might have lost a lot of money in that city because they were forced to sell the grapes cheaper because of the resistance and inability to get them in. So, in rating them effective in terms of whether they had gone down from 1966, were the cities of Chicago, Detroit, Pittsburgh, Baltimore, Buffalo, and Providence. And now, these are very...
Read those again.
Were the cities of Chicago, Detroit, Pittsburgh, Baltimore, Buffalo, and Providence, where Marcos has also been working.
That's from that thing, the confidential report on a comparison, or is this is another one you drew up?
Yeah, we drew this 66. Up just comparing the two. Right. Now, the ones that had stayed either the same or had gone up only slightly, one or two places, for example, had gone from number two to number one or from number three to number four, was what we considered the middle group. Those were Los Angeles, Newark, New York, San Francisco, Philadelphia, Boston, Cleveland, Seattle, St. Louis, Kansas City, and then there were three additional cities where we don't have organizers, but for one reason or another they just stay the same. And those were Birmingham, Salt Lake City, and Albany. This does not mean that the grape shipments might not have gone up or down. This is in terms of the ranking of the cities. Well, the problem cities were Minneapolis, Atlanta, before we sent an organizer there had just shot up because of the diversion of the grapes, Houston, Portland, Oregon, Washington, and Denver.
Denver went up?
Denver went up, and let me see how many places.
Washington, D.C., huh?
Yeah, Washington, D.C., in 1966. Wait a minute, how do we do this?
18 to, went from 21 to 18.
No, wait, it went down then.
No. The number comes from.
Oh, that's right.
18.
It became. That's right. Yeah. When it goes down, that means that it's.
Effective.
That it's. No, wait a minute. That's ineffective.
That's
right, because it becomes more important. More grapes are being shipped there, okay? Mm-hmm. So Washington, D.C. went from 21st place.
Excuse me now. Okay, when the ranking goes
more
down.
More grapes went
to that city. It became...
When the ranking goes down?
It's closer to the top, is really.
That's right.
See, one is the top.
Okay, look, if it goes from 22 to 18,
right.
that means it's getting more grapes.
Worse.
If it goes up, that means it's the is being ineffective there.
Ineffective.
Ineffective, yeah.
That's right. Okay. Now, for example, Minneapolis. Where are we in Minneapolis? Minneapolis went from 9 to 12. We considered a three-point difference to be a crucial one. That if they really moved up three points up, that it was a
pure. The points are not related to Carlisle.
No. They're not. They're related to the place.
What
it means more.
Then
how did you decide?
Well, I haven't done that. Is the problem, except comparing it to 67.
Right, and, you didn't, and we didn't compare it to 67 because of the problems of the harvest.
Yeah, I went back to 1966 ratings.
Because that, it's funny, my impressions are completely, I don't have any hard data, my impressions are somewhat different than that.
Okay.
That could be my problem, and I don't know. It's in Chicago. You have Chicago staying different. The same.
No, effective. No, Chicago's been effective.
It's a very simple process we went through. Maybe it was too simple. We just numbered all the cities, as in 1966, 1 through 41, and then we numbered all the cities in 1968, 1 through 41, and if they jumped or they went up and down by in terms of quantity, that's the way we reached. And really, by and large, if you look at them, it comes out about to what we know, too, because those first cities, Chicago we know, Detroit we know, Pittsburgh we know, Baltimore, Buffalo, and Providence is a mystery to me.
I see. You know, I don't argue with the figures, you know, but it doesn't ring true with the reports we get. You know, for instance, like Boston, you know, I would imagine that Boston would be highly effective. Chicago, the reports that we got, they said couldn't move there for a long, long time. Mm-hmm. Finally, it just broke, but recently, you know. Mm-hmm. But at least, but Boston, I had reports a long time ago that.
Oh, we threw Boston in Chicago and Detroit. Didn't we?
Yeah. Now, Boston went down. Boston was effective 2 points. For example, in 1966, it was in fifth place. In 1968, it was in seventh place. This was the middle range. It doesn't mean to say it's completely ineffective. It's been quite effective, but it's not the top. You see what I mean?
But it's not as effective as Chicago, Detroit, Pittsburgh, Baltimore.
Yeah, especially recently. It's been getting more and more shipments.
Well, so ineffective doesn't mean,
No, ineffective does not mean that it's
less effective.
But this
less
by shipments?
It's a bad word in the middle.
By shipments?
Yeah.
Well,
no, by the place.
Huh? Yeah, but I mean, how do you gauge
yeah,
railroad
shipments? By the shipments.
Yeah. I don't think that has got any bearing because you get a lot of shipments to a certain town and then they divert that somewhere
else.
Well,
see that you know.
And
but,
that really,
but over a 4-month period, that's going to balance off.
Well, no, because they can be shipping to Chicago or they can be shipping somewhere else and diverting from there.
Well, ultimately, none of this is relevant anyway, and not as relevant as what we're going to get to. And that is the fact that the bad cities we know are bad. They've sold more grapes there. They've unloaded. They've sold more grapes there.
These are unloads anyhow. These aren't shipments. These are unloads.
Okay. Now, on the basis of this varied information, we thought about the cities where we needed. Both in addition to this, these were the cities where we had people. In addition to these cities, we were thinking about areas where grapes were being diverted to, where they had really gone up, like some of the southern cities, especially some of the Texas cities. And if you look on the second page, the third page, there, Caesar, we tried to rank, in order of importance, where we needed new organizers. Okay? This is in addition to the cities where we have organizers. And we base them on what their place was in the top 41, as well as other things that we know, in the year of 66, because 68 was not finished yet. Now, on the basis of that, we had two cities that were top priority. Those were Philadelphia, which had been really having problems, and Newark, New Jersey, which was a place out of New York. Where they were pushing them off to, because when they can't get them into New York, they're going all into New Jersey. So that's why, in spite of the fact that New York may seem clean in terms of what we know about the chain stores, New York is getting still a lot of shipments of grapes, and they're being diverted into New Jersey.
And those are the suburbs of.
Jake, where did the information come for the diversions in the north?
Well, Dolores felt that way, you know, too.
Yeah, but I
mean, it was logical that was happening.
Right, but the Market News Service tells me that they're not going to Newark.
Where does it tell you that they're going?
Tell me they're going to New York City.
Is there a separate thing for unloads in Newark?
I can get a breakdown in Newark, and it runs generally 3 and 4 every week.
Just to Newark. But what about them unloading in New York and trucking them over? I don't know.
Cost factor there, I don't know.
No, they go from the Hunts Point Terminal, they go across the bridge.
Yeah.
Right, that can happen very easily, yeah.
What do you know about the Hunts Terminal? Richard, you work at that, you work there. Who buys there?
All the independent grocers, all the small, the food stands, the independent.
What about the people from out of town, from out of New York? Do they buy there?
Yes.
Connecticut?
Right.
Yes.
Okay. So that terminal service is...
Four states, actually.
I see. And so, do we have anything for separately? Are there any shipments going to, for instance, to Connecticut?
Hartford, is that on there?
Hartford?
They're going from... I talked to Marcos today, and he said that out of... The Connecticut shipments are coming out of New York, and the other upstate New England shipments are going out of Boston. The Connecticut shipments, he said, are coming out of New York City by truck.
So what I'm trying to get at is has New York been effective or not? You know.
Well, they're still getting car lots. The fact that they may not be sold in New York City, in Manhattan.
It seems to me that this is what happens in New York. And there's a metropolitan New York area which is all the boroughs and includes Newark, and that is so massive. We're talking about 8 million people there. So massive that you could close down 3 boroughs and it would add to the cost. But there's still so many markets in across the river and up into Connecticut and the whole metropolitan area that even though we've been very effective in that central New York area on chain stores, there are two places it seems to me they're going, according to Dolores. One is the little fruit stands. And the other is, you know, beyond that inner city area, into the suburbs. We think that's
what they call New York, or what is called New York in this statistic, is composed of about 8 or 9 separate reporting districts, several of which are in New Jersey. Now, I should imagine that we would be the reports are collected on the basis of these 8 or 9 different points, unload points. And we should be able to get that information from the New York Market News Reporting Offices, that where specifically in the New York area those things are going.
As it would be very, very helpful.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it also be logical, Woody, that, you know, I mean, most of the suburbs out towards Connecticut and northern New Jersey, that they would buy more grapes in the inner city?
I'm afraid of my looking at it and being logical about it. I've been wrong so many times this year. I don't know. It makes sense, but I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Which, like a Safeway, like if say there's a Safeway in Elizabeth, New Jersey or someplace like that, would Safeway unload all of its stuff at, what is it, Hunter's Point or Hunt's Point?
Hunt's Point.
And then ship?
No, they receive direct. These big chain stores, most of them receive direct, you know, they buy their car lots and they, I don't know where the point is, but they
buy them out here.
Yeah, they don't go to Hunt's Point.
Just like any piece to the out of New York about 15, 20 miles, there's a big center there to police.
Yeah.
Is that over in Jersey, man?
Yes, the big area is in Jersey, really.
No, it's not going to Jersey. It's going the other way towards Pennsylvania.
No, but I mean, the big railroad center is in Jersey.
Wow. Well.
In Jersey.
Okay. We're now at the new markets.
Right. Well, the one in some, the ones that are important that we haven't had organizers that have either become important or where organizers have left and we feel their priorities. Okay.
I was gonna say, Richard. Remember, we've been having those meetings. We have a guy follow us, and puts out that the car that carries that big.
With the. The receiver thing?
Yeah. Why don't you just check around?
Huh? They meet outside here?
Yeah, it was in the house yesterday again.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They have a big one called a telescopic.
Really?
Yeah. And they
put it on
they can pick up.
Chair.
Right they, yeah. They, when they know there's a meeting, they we caught them twice now.
Oh, my gosh.
Supply records.
But they, you know, they pick up the...
go in the bathroom and turn the water on.
Really?
Yeah. We caught him. Well, we did. Who? Petra? Petra caught him.
That's the guy who chased to McFarland?
Yeah.
Oh, that must be the same guy that, gave me those $100 for the pesticide tape the other day. He's very kind.
Nice guy.
$100 worth of what?
$500 for a pesticide tape. Whistle, whistle, we should be doing. We should be bugging the... we need some devices. Bugging,
I'll tell you what, I've been sitting in all these meetings. I don't know what the hell is going on, so I know goddamn well. I don't know what's going on.
Is bugging considered violent? It's untruthful, though. I should know what's going on at the Chimara office.
Well, I really like, you want to know, but you don't want to spend the money to know.
Yeah.
It costs $10,000 to find out.
No, $700.
Would it be something to know?
It would be very useful.
Huh? Would it help? Would it help to know?
Mm-hmm. Maybe they need a secretarial help in this.
Well, if they operate the way we do, it could be just as confusing as helpful.
Right.
Well,
did you know?
You want to go ahead?
We were thinking of the top priorities. One is Newark, New Jersey, with the New York area. Another is Philadelphia, where we've had people, but it's they've been having a lot of problems there. The third and fourth, and these are interchangeable, is Montreal and St. Louis. You don't have St. Louis on your list, but it's 13th above Miami. In the 1966. The next place is Miami, which has moved up tremendously this year in the shipments.
Oh,
yeah, it's gone. Well, let's look. It's gone up three places, but in these last, overall, but in these last weeks, you know, after the boycott started going, right, for the first couple months, so for the last, what would you say, 6 weeks, 8 weeks?
I think Miami first started somewhere in October.
Yeah, it has just shot up, you know, to the top 10 part sometimes.
Then we had it under control for a while, then it came back.
Right,
again.
So that we had an effective committee for a period of time, and it went back down, and now it's really shot up again.
Mm-hmm.
So that Miami is one of the very big markets that they're opening.
Well, anyway, that's an important point, because you can almost measure when the committee was active and when it wasn't active.
Sure, yeah.
And people don't stop buying grapes just because, you know, they don't remember. They only stop buying grapes when you tell them not to buy grapes. And you can tell it. I mean, you just
yeah.
It goes up and down.
Then Atlanta was another important one, but which really shot up. But now Luis Melendres is there, and they're having very good luck. Then after that, the sixth one was the Dallas-Fort Worth area, where we have no one. The Dallas is the 13th largest. And Fort Worth is the 35th, but together, they make up an important area. I don't know
They're
if it's useful.
They're only 40 miles apart, too. Absolutely.
I don't know if it's possible to send someone there if it's effective, but it's in terms of the grape shipments, it's important.
Well, that's why we got all those brown killers, you know.
Yeah.
Elephants are violent. They can stop a damn grape, you know, much less kill a human being.
So, that's. In terms of the shipments, I don't know what in terms of our other priorities and other things we know about Dallas, if it's useful, but we're doing this just in terms of the shipments of the importance of the grapes. Next comes New Orleans, which is also, in 66 was 23rd, and let's see, in 68, where are we? No. In 66 was 8, let's see how we go. In 66 was 18, in 68 was 23. What I think is this is opposite. It's gone up about five places.
Five places?
Yeah, it's in these latest weeks, it's just shot up.
Do you have any latest population figures
yes.
for this town?
We have, you see on this first page, the first page where it says place and population. The last one to your right, the last column.
Yes, uh-huh.
We looked in an almanac to see which were the largest cities and if they correlated with the grape shipments.
In 1960, New Orleans was 655,000.
655,000?
The 15th largest city in the country.
New Orleans?
No, wait. Yes, the 15th largest.
The 15th largest.
Then...
Secondary picketing, a boycott is legal in Louisiana.
It's legal?
Yes, those are other considerations that we should think about when we decide what we're
going to
do.
It's not
going
to make it legal.
Yeah.
Probably a major point of entry for imported goods from Latin America as well.
Yeah. You have all the problems with those Cubans. But they see a red flag, they're going to start shooting.
Well, you got them in Miami too, though. But the Cuban
garment workers,
the ladies are helping
they
us.
They help.
The Cubans?
The red garment workers.
The garment workers.
The refugee?
Yeah.
Yeah, how about that?
Well, that says something about them or says something about the union.
Both, I guess.
Then, the next was San Antonio, Texas, which was 22nd largest, and we haven't had very much happen
to
happen there.
That's a shame. La Raza power in it.
Yeah, sure. Then we have a complex of places. We were considering sending in areas which are close to each other, which together would make up a large proportion,
mm-hmm.
but which singly are not as important.
Yeah.
We were considering instituting the traveler system, and this was just an idea, of having, like, for example, the 8th largest there would be the Birmingham, Memphis, Nashville complex, which are within a couple hours of each other. And those together were the 25th, 30th, and 36th largest cities. But when you put them together, you know, they'd be quite substantial, and we felt it would be worth having one person coordinating.
What are the cities again?
Birmingham, Alabama, Memphis, Tennessee, and Nashville.
Yeah. That's another example of an effective committee, because you can measure, for example, in Nashville, measure the difference in shipments.
Have you noticed that?
Yeah, there was a difference at the time when we got a report that AMP had caved in and stuff, there was a difference in shipments.
They have AMP there.
Then is another complex areas where we thought it would be also useful to have a traveler. And that was the Albany, Schenectady, Troy, and then Syracuse as a side finger area. That was the 28th. Just Albany, Schenectady, and Troy, those three cities which are grouped together, was the 28th largest receiver. And Syracuse with that would move it
How
up.
How far is from the furthest point?
Well, Albany, Schenectady, and Troy are within about half an hour's or an hour's distance of each other.
It's
a triangle
of
cities.
And then
and
about 150,
Syracuse
200
is about
miles.
3 hours away or 2 hours away.
It's pretty close.
It's not how Venice. How is it in terms of
maybe 2 hours. Two or three hours between.
It's all highway toll roads though.
Yeah.
Okay.
Those damn toll roads.
It's all express. Yeah, those toll roads. Yeah. I almost got in trouble with them.
Then came after that area. Came the city of Indianapolis and the small Indiana towns around there. But Indianapolis alone was 31st place in the cities. I'm going down in priorities now. Then the Milwaukee-Madison area, where these are all areas where we don't have anyone except for Philadelphia.
Don't we have somebody in Milwaukee?
Well, Jesus on us, I guess, but they've been having it has.
Well, let's say we don't have anybody. There. I mean, we have somebody, but he doesn't seem to answer our phones. It's out there.
Okay.
So it's the Milwaukee-Madison area. Then is Providence, Rhode Island, which was 34th in the shipments. And then two areas which we felt, although they were not on the top 40, or they were not on the top 36, which is actually what the Havel always says, 41, I guess, where we thought it might be useful to have someone, would be the Ohio, the Columbus, Dayton, Springfield, and the small labor, all those labor towns in that area, because there's a huge labor population, according to Jim.
There's a lot, Venice is better because
it's quite big.
Toledo.
Toledo, you know, the whole works there.
It's very highly concentrated.
And it can be good.
Indiana.
The labor population there is a bit conservative, but they can be good for raising money for the union, you know, and so forth. And I think they're making progress in Springfield.
Yeah.
So just leave them. So,
but in terms of the concentration of population of grape eaters, we thought that would be that might be useful. And then the only other one would be the Oklahoma City, Tulsa area. Together.
Oklahoma City.
Tulsa. partially because they've begun to really band together there, and it has quite a, I think together, what is it, about 500,000 population?
Mm-hmm.
Or a million?
How far is that?
It's an hour from each other.
Forward.
Well, Tulsa is a, wow, that's a bad place, huh?
But there's a good union there, it's the oil and atomic workers.
Together, Oklahoma and Tulsa have about 650,000.
Well, we got Oral Roberts there.
Oral Roberts University. Well, there'd be a lot of religious leaders helping us.
Yeah.
Oh, there's a lot of, yeah, there's a lot of people there.
So, those, in brief, were the kinds of things we were thinking of. And should we talk about the area meeting idea as yet?
Well, maybe I'll just stop there and see.
I wanted to ask Willie one question. Now, William, these reports, these 41 cities, now that's unload for 60% of the grape, table grape that's shipped?
Yeah, they figure that covers roughly 60% of all grape shipments.
Are they the 41 largest cities or the 41 sample cities?
Well, they did a breakdown on population. Frankly, never.
Yeah, they don't compare in population.
Yeah, they don't compare in population.
I mean, there are cities that are larger than those 41 that don't show up there.
What I suspect those are is the 41 cities where there are reporting offices, well, from which they get reports. I think they're probably a sample.
Would there be any way to find out which are really the 41 top?
Sure. With the population that they got from the almanac.
I mean, would that correlate necessarily, the fact that they're large cities in population, that they would be the largest eaters?
Makes sense. I don't.
Yeah, I know. Well,
do we know anything about the habits? About who, for instance, which groups? Are there any identifiable groups that tend to be grape eaters?
Yeah, it seems to me anyhow that where you have a large Italian and Southern European population, you have a lot of juice grapes going in.
Also, a lot of Jewish communities too.
For fresh grapes. Huh?
Fresh grapes. Jewish communities.
Thanks, God. Stop doing things here then.
Well, see, that's why I'm.
That's partly true of.
Yeah.
One of the reasons it might go up in Miami at this time of the year is because this is the time of the year when the rich people are in Miami.
Yeah.
And you can see when the rich people move into a town.
How difficult would it be to operate over there?
Here in Miami?
Yeah. I kind of.
Oh, very easy, effective.
Easy, you think so?
There's a very.
I kind of think that they would shoot you the first time they saw you.
Oh, no. Oh. There's a very good liberal community in Miami.
Yeah.
I live in Miami.
I was there for a convention, you know, and I just kept looking all the southern United States.
We had this.
Very, very strange thing about the South. Very weird things are happening down there, like in Atlanta. Must have something to do with the labor's fight to stay alive or something. But Venice was in something like Memphis. He was telling me about.
See, what is happening is that labor is struggling to survive, so they're really different than the labor unions in the north. The union meetings, they respond differently, you know, just all the way along the line. And then also, what is happening is that there's a growing number of white radical students, SOC, or Southern Students Organizing Committee.
Yeah.
Well, the first place I want to
Southerners?
Speak. Yeah. The first place I wanted to speak was Richmond, Virginia, the SOC convention, their first, their organizing convention. It was really something, right in Richmond, you know, to have 200 or 300 people with, you know, guys with long hair and beards, and some of them were wearing bullets, you know, and the whole works. It was in the same, it was the Jefferson Hotel, the same hotel where the American Independent Party was holding a Virginia convention, you know. And it was really something.
These are guys with the southern drawl and everything. The southern,
right,
southern.
Right, yeah. And they're mixed in with black militants.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and so what they're doing, see, that they're helping textile mill workers to organize.
Uh-huh.
You know, and then also they've been fighting the prison system in the South and all this stuff. And so they're growing. They've got their office in Nashville. In fact, that's a group that's leading their boycott in Nashville. You know, so the labor union leaders, most of them are not afraid of the students. Then I found more radicals, more labor union radicals in the South than I did in the North.
And many of them, you know, we've done really a lot of work, like in the coal mines and all that, but somehow we're kept out of the leadership.
And in Miami, so we know that some of the large supermarket owners are Jewish, you know, so that they're more well, at least they respond to that pressure, you know.
Do we have any do we have any way of telling, for instance, like take AMP and say that we want to take all these areas you mentioned? Would it make any sense to mount a campaign against AMP throughout all these areas? Would AMP be a store to do it? For instance, in California, it would be Safeway. You would want to do it that way.
Dolores' theory that she operates on. That you get one major chain in the city and you take it through a whole large region, mm-hmm. and you use the same.
Especially with a traveler idea, you know, if you take three cities at once, you get the same chain in all three or four cities, especially if they're in the same area and covered by the same district manager or whatever it may be.
AMP is like mainly east of the Mississippi and all the way down except into Florida. And we tried hitting AMP in Indianapolis, in Nashville, in Louisville, in Charlotte, in New Orleans, in Rochester, also. And in some places, they folded just with the threat of picketing. And we had people who saw, after they got AMP in New York, one guy saw a memorandum to an AMP division manager saying that if the Great Boycott people, you know, approach you, you know, let us know in New York. When I think, you know, they knew what was going on in AMP in New Orleans when Dolores was meeting with them. And knowing this, having this information, makes it much more effective. The store can't give the people a runaround. You know, if you coordinate it and you know that they have AMP in one place, and our people who are running the boycott, say in city like New Orleans, they know they have them in New York. They can't give them this runaround about, you know, they can't make the decision, or we have to wait, or that, you know, it's never been done, and this kind of thing. I think it helps, you know, to coordinate that to some extent.
One thing it seemed to me was that going to the headquarters cities of large chains was very important. Didn't Eliseo report that he not only got Jewel in Chicago, but all their subsidiaries in the other states as well?
Well, there was one in Indianapolis, and there was a Jewel, National Foods, for example, in New Orleans. We didn't get that one yet. But what I think happens, I don't know.
Point of embarrassment maybe is their national office.
Well, see, if you have something like Eliseo happening to their national office, that really weakens them, I think, pretty much, you know, because they've had threats of sittings and things like that. And it makes the management much more accessible. I mean, they're willing to talk. But I don't know, like, under the division system, you know, like they have the different divisions, I don't understand it, because in some areas, like the AMP, got an immediate response just with the threat of picketing. They've agreed to take them off. In other areas, they're just going to stay and fight it out.
AMP, for example, is a totally warehouse operation. There is no markup at retail. All the markup takes place out of the warehouse. Now, that might be a factor. They're very closely controlled.
I was thinking, before we got into any strategy, it might be good to have Venice give his feelings about a lot of small towns and what happens in small towns, and then what Jerry and Jane know about small towns, where they've been talking. How it actually works, not having somebody in a small town.
Okay. Well, the way our approach was that I travel mostly to places where we have no activity going, but some of them are now being, you know, considered here in this list. The first thing that we did is, I went to Baltimore and then Washington and New York to make contacts with our student groups and so forth. And I think, Jane, you're the one that put the packet together, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, is that being picked up?
Yes, go ahead.
Okay.
Jim put together a packet. Jim put together a packet that I think is really, really effective. And what it does is that it gives all of the essential information necessary to start a boycott. That all, you know, well, my speech would go this way. If nothing is going on, let's say going to the city, the approach would be to get a meeting with the students. We usually have somebody there already interested in doing something, either a labor union leader or a student. But what I tried to do is fuse the students and the unions together, which took quite some, you know, sometimes in a major operation, you know. But then what I would tell students is that, you know, I call that a suburban guerrilla packet, because see, they had to find the resources with which to reproduce the leaflets and all of that. But we found that you know, it depended on the ability, that the talent of organization for the different groups. There's some cities where, some small towns near universities where there's a strong SDS group that really does something. And they would take this on, and the first thing they would do is knock out the groups out of their own university, you know, or create a minor Berkeley if the administration, you know, wouldn't take the grapes off. And then after that, they would move into the community, or first they would build up community support, then they would attack the university. Every city is different, you know, and it had to be done differently in every way. And then also, we have to take into consideration the I guess the idiosyncrasies of labor union leaders. There are some old guys, you know, that, you know, if you didn't approach them first or through the proper channels or something like that, you know, things had gotten messed up. So I had to go in there and try to patch up relationships. Like in Albany, you know, the trouble between the unions and the brothers. We were never able to get that together.
Oh, yes, we are now.
Oh, we are?
We're really working together good now.
Oh, good. Okay.
All except for the building trades.
Yeah, because I was screamed at by one of the guys there. But anyway, so the situation is this. I think that this traveler idea, it could be very effective to connect some of these towns that are close together, because you know they're small enough so that you don't need somebody staying there all the time, but they're important enough together with other groups to form a very important cluster. And in many of these small towns, we have people with the ability that if you can just push them every 3 or 4 days, you know, they'll do a good job. But you've got to keep that contact person to person every 3 or 4 days. So we can get, you know, keep traveling around the circle of whatever you're covering. I think we can, you know, do quite a bit. Then also, another problem has been that, for example, in St. Louis, there have been 3 different movements, great boycott movements. You know, one when Larry went through, once when Brian went through, and then once when someone else went through. But then they last about a month or 3 or 4 weeks, and then they fall. There are several problems there. First of all, the boycott office is located in downtown, in the downtown area, and that's no good, because you can't get your people out there to meet or anything like that. Secondly, you're under the close surveillance of the labor unions, so you can't decorate your office to appeal to the students, you know, little psychological things like that. You know, you can't have your Che Guevara posters up and all that, because you know, the union leaders get all disturbed. And then also, the unions sometimes like to censor the picket signs. So you can't, you know, you can't use creativity very much. They want to have them all printed up and very nice. And then we have trouble, you know, if the guys have long hair or something like that, the unions don't want to associate all this. In St. Louis, for example, they talk about, you know, they wanted me to come back, and so I started listing the conditions under which I would operate. They didn't like it very much, you know. For example, I think it's very necessary in the large cities to have the people out in the where the people are, you know, like a house or something like that, and so they can, you know, work until 11 if necessary. You know, just the whole works. And so I don't know. I think it does more harm than good to have someone go in there and cause a movement to go up and then leave and let it fall, because pretty soon the day's going to come where we send somebody, there isn't going to be any response. You know. So I think that would be basically, I can answer questions, I think.
What about the universities that you visited? I mean, what was the response, and were there large groups coming out? I mean, for instance, what would be an average an estimate average attendance at these meetings?
Okay, it would depend on where you are, you know, depending on whether or not the area is basically conservative or not. For example, then also the response you get from the ones that are there is also something to be taken into consideration. Like in Delaware, we had about 150 people show up, and this was SDS. Usually it's SDS or some other kind of a radical group. And but usually the SDS group sponsoring it manages to appeal to a wide range of students so that they'll come. And they, you know, I persuade them, for example, if SDS has a very poor reputation, for them not to use their name, and they don't. You know, those are the groups I respect. Now, there are others that only want the publicity, so we just tell them, well, we don't need your help. In Delaware, had a guy come in who was eating grapes, and all dressed up and everything, and the students were really hostile. Oh, yeah, I think I already told you about that, didn't I? Then I just described the sanitary conditions under which they were picked, and I concluded by saying, well, sir, now you know what you're eating. And so then I also I love to play around with the opposition. But so we sometimes we get very good response, but then other times we get very poor response. Like at Ohio State University, Columbus, Ohio. We have a girl named Macias, Elena Macias, working there, and you know I've gone there twice. I came back through once, and she something's wrong with the publicity or something. They only got about five people out there, you know, and only one new person out of the five, you know, and I had made a special trip for that one particular meeting, and so I just depends on them. But I think that if we had this traveler system, you know, like Columbus, you know, that area, it takes somebody who knows how to draw commitment out of people, and to contact them now and then.
Did you visit any ghetto groups?
Well, okay, Newark, New Jersey. There I was in the middle of the ghetto. Father Bill Linder, the Queen of Angels Parish, about two or three blocks away from where the uprising took place, and there I got to talk to I had a panel discussion with Leroy Jones and Ron Karenga, and then some of the Black Panthers in the area, then also a relatively newly formed local union, maintenance workers, black union itself, a guy named Cheney Field. He's fantastic. He can't read or write, but he's very charismatic and very knows what to do immediately. You know, his meetings just take place, let's say, out on a park bench or something like that, and he's really something.
But I'm interested to know what Karanga's response was.
It was very positive. They how the Black Panthers have their identifying handshake. Have you seen it?
No.
Here, let me show you. See, this is really important because I had to talk to a lot of Black Panther groups. Okay, you know, I'd go like this, you know, and they'd just kind of take me as anybody else, but then I'd go like this, and they'd say, brother, you know, then the rest would, you know.
You know, like this. And the first is like this, the second like this, and the second,
where is this?
That's the West Coast, man.
That's West Coast.
Wow. In Detroit, where we were having trouble, you guys sent me the brown beret, and I gave them a hard rap, about 100 Black Panthers, and they came right behind us, into the thing. So it just depends on how you talk to different groups, and every group is different, and everything. Then also, I spoke to some state conventions, and those were mostly for the money.
Labor.
Yeah, labor.
Thanks. What about other minority groups?
I spoke to a group of Puerto Ricanos in New Jersey. I think it was in, what was it? I forgot.
Newark, huh?
No,
it wasn't Newark. Morristown?
Maybe
Peters, is there a Petersburg?
Plainfield? It's irrelevant.
It's one
Morristown.
Of the New Jersey towns.
I thought Dover. Could have been Dover. Patterson? I forget. I spoke to them in Spanish and they responded, but not, I don't know, La Raza and the Puerto Ricanos just don't. respond. I mean, they respond Viva and all this, but that's all, you know.
For instance, how long would you stay in a place?
It all depended. Let's see. Probably an average of 2 days. Would that be a good average? Because there were a couple of places where I stayed almost a week. That was in Ithaca to rest up a bit, and then in Yellow Springs. I stayed a week there, but there anywhere else. Sometimes it was only for, you know, one or two speeches, and I'd be on my way to the next place.
Like in a big city, you'd say maybe, like Indianapolis, you'd stay maybe 2 or 3 days in the city, and then maybe hit, when traveling to another city, you know, one speech stop or something.
What would you do besides the speeches, you know, besides talking to the university? For instance, you were there because you talked to the university.
Well, the community group, okay, church groups, labor union groups, anybody that had a near.
When you got there, you had a series of...
usually there was a schedule all set up. Now and then, though, I had to, you know, right on the spot, you know, start making contacts.
So we set him up by phone, Susan.
Oh, I see.
Ahead of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they planned ahead, you know,
so
that.
So when you go to a town, you just didn't go to one meeting, but you made
lots.
Quite a few. Like in Indiana, which was really beautiful, I stayed a week there.
Thank you.
This was really the epitome. Well, Michigan was pretty good too. Those two came right after. I was already, you know, right before going to Detroit, I was depressed. Because, you know, I had only been starting things, you know, and starting things is really, you know, teaching people how to do it, and especially if they've been trying, but just they're all depressed, you know, that gets to you. But now and then, you know, you get these experiences that, you know, fire you up again. Detroit was one of them, because I was there when we closed the market, you know, the great market there. Then Indiana, in 5 days I spoke in 22 different places, crisscrossing the state up and down. That's a new boycott committee. You know, they're good. It's the Socialist Party and the UAW working together. And we get the weirdest combinations, you know.
What do they call themselves?
The Socialist Party.
The Young Socialist Alliance.
Yeah, the Young Socialist Alliance.
And there's so many factions that I was calling the Sacramento Friends of the Farm Workers, who are also Young Socialists, say, you know, like, which faction are these guys?
Yeah.
And they said that they were okay. You know, because I didn't know. It's so hard to tell. There's so many factions.
Anyway,
that's the Norman Thomas
Democratic Socialism.
Debs.
Yeah.
Yeah, Debs.
And they put together a meeting for Venustiano. They had AFL-CIO, UAW, SDS. They had National Farmers Organization. They put together the most broad spread.
You should see that press conference.
That's the same group in Sacramento.
Oh, that group is cool.
Yeah.
But see, they don't.
No, they think.
They think. That's right. That's the one that. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, you know the first
they
day.
They want to destroy everything. They want to gain power. You know?
The first day, it was a press conference. 4 television stations, 4 radio stations. You know, microphones all over the place, and it was just really a beautiful press conference. That was the best press conference I ever.
Where was that?
That was in Indianapolis, you know, the Socialist Party, and so then after that, it was just they have a strong thing going, you know, they've united everything, you know, just. Really.
Did you ever run to this? I ran to in Kansas City. Was it Kansas City? It was in Kansas City, I think. No, thanks. Thanks, bud. I just had some bad rides, so I'm okay now. Thank you. And they had a group of Chicanos, about 50 Chicanos, and they had big sombreros, you know, and sarapes and everything. And Brian was there, and so was
Lynch?
Yeah, Lynch, one of our guys, who was that one?
Oh, Bustos.
Macario Bustos. And the press came out, and they were going to interview me right in the lobby, you know. I sat down, and there was three TV cameras, 3 stations, and about 4 or 5 newspaper men, and about 3 or 4 radio guys. And then a strange thing happened. They were there, they had lights on, and then they to do, you know. And then, so I told them a bit about the boycott, and then they start turning off the lights, and
oh my gosh.
And so then I said, then I, you know, I said, I gotta do something here, you know. So I thought of, I said, we're in the same position as the NFOs, or the NFO? Yeah, we're in the same position. We're, you know, and when I sit there, when they put on the lights right away, and I was able to get the boycott and get the strike in the context that, that we were in the same position that these guys who had to kill their hogs because they weren't getting somebody up on top of it. And really came to life. Do you ever get into that?
I had a couple of experiences like that, not with TV, but one thing that this trip helped me personally is that I can get up and in 30 seconds I know what the crowd is, you know, and I can do anything I want with them. But now and then, you know, they're so apathetic that you know, you could cut their throats and they probably would just sit there, you know. And I had this experience like in Trenton State College, I spoke to two sociology classes. Yeah, that happened there, and then something similar happened at Fisk, you know, where it's black, but they're not really black, they're Negro, you know, I make a distinction now.
Yeah.
And but anyway, at Trenton, I spoke, I showed Decision in Delano and everything, and I put my all into it, and I gave them 15 minutes to ask questions. And, I had already been spoiled by a standing ovation at Princeton University, you know, so I thought, well, these guys are going to react, you know. And so, any questions? Nothing. He just sat there. You know, so I said, you know, you're excused, you know. Then the next class, it happened again. And so I looked at them and I said, well, you know, I don't blame you for what the educational system has done to you. And so the last time, it was the same thing again, so I took the brown power approach, you know, just to shake them up. Because that's all I could do, you know, I couldn't expect anything else. And then the only other times I remember that happening were a couple of union meetings. You know, they just sit there and don't do any, you know, well, none. Sometimes they don't even do that. They just give me their sympathy, you know. So I tell them, well, we can't eat sympathy. But I think that what is necessary is just, we've got the people with which to create effective boycott committees here, but we need somebody to be able to get to them every 3 or 4 days. And
we need more people out there.
Yeah,
so we need,
that's it.
You know, just
some
telephone.
People. In other words, people that can move.
Yeah, and can see what's going on in person, because it's very difficult. You know, Jane and Jerry really put in a lot of work and everything like that, but there's some things that they're not going to say.
Yeah.
You know, and then they create false images or false pictures. Because I was, you know, surprised a couple of times, you know, to find an entirely different story than what, you know, we were expecting.
What about, how many more people do we need? Units, like,
okay,
for instance?
Yeah, we have that.
You have that? Now what else do we have before we go into the story?
The one thing that we, I'd like Jane and Jerry to say a little bit about what happens, what happens when they use the red phone and try to...
Yeah, that'd be interesting.
Well, so like what we've done in this last...
You know, I think it'd be a good idea if we move the mic from there because there's a fan out there and it gets the noise into it.
What we've done over the last 4 or 5 months is divided up the country. And Janie took the West Coast and the Northeast, and I took the Midwest and the South. And what we did was we made up a do-it-yourself boycott kit that we could send out to somebody with instructions how to form a committee, Friends of the Farm Workers Committee, how to approach the stores, even put in a form letter for them, you know, to modify, and then how to go into picketing and what the legal aspects were.
How to hold a press conference.
How to hold a press conference, and all of the materials. So we could just, you know, send it right off to them. Now, what we do then is pick out the priority cities. I concentrated mainly in the South because, you know, that was an area where really nothing was happening. And I took Atlanta and New Orleans and Miami and then tried to get things going in them and then built out to Louisville and Nashville and Memphis and Charlotte and then some other cities. And I found, and I think Janie has too, that wherever we've called, we've maybe one person out of 500 won't respond. I mean, everybody that, well, we call, we don't call a random sample of people, of course. You know, the people we call are students, are people that we get through people Chris knows in the migrant ministry and different, you know, just different names. And so what we try to do, the hard thing, is to find a coordinator or to get a couple of people. It's much better
to get not just one person coordinating it, but several different groups. See, if you get one person, then everything depends on them. But if you get several different groups, I mean, by phone, then they keep an eye on each other, and they kind of, you know, play on each other, and you know, they feel responsible to each other. Now, let me just talk a little bit about the South. I think certain things that are happening in the South are, one, the labor and the students. The labor is weak, and the students want to help labor because they want to be where the action is, in a sense, and they feel that, you know, and labor needs the students to help them in picketing and publicity, and so there's an alliance there. Also, you don't run into this kind of petty hierarchy, you know, with labor leaders with a bunch of protocol. I mean, like, in Atlanta, you call up AFL-CIO guys and they say, well, this guy with the Teamsters can help you, and we're working with him on this, and the same thing in Memphis or in Nashville. And also, we've had, like, experiences in Little Rock or in Memphis or in, even in Louisville, where a labor leader will tell us, get in touch with this militant black group, we've been working with them. And there's not that kind of thing. Now, what one thing once one person said to me in the South was that